Blog Talk Radio.
Are you looking for an all-natural solution to skincare? Try Simplicita all-natural skincare products. Coconut oil locks in moisture with nature's finest organic solution. Rich with vitamin E and rejuvenating proteins, it can help with enhancing skin nourishment for wrinkles, skin damage, tissue repair, and more. Simplicita skincare line includes Simplicita coconut oil, Simplicita bath salts, and Simplicita bath gel. Get healthier looking skin today. Order all three today for $40 at www.simplicita.com. And I know for a fact that it helps with diabetic edema. My husband has edema on both of his legs. He is insulin dependent, and he also has very dry skin on his feet and toes, and it has made a world of difference. You definitely want to go to www.simplicita.com and order her products today. They do not have any unnatural ingredients or any preservatives. It is all simply coconut oil with maybe a little jasmine. Order it today. Are you looking for a website creator that will make your website stand out above the herd? Are you looking for someone that knows your needs and can create a website that is not only eye-catching, but one that will stay with the customer as they scroll through the net? If so, contact Wellhaven and Associates. Lourdes Wellhaven has the magic touch when it comes to websites. You give her an idea and let her run with it, and she will create something beautiful. If you don't believe me, check out authoryvonmason.com and see what she has done for me. And here's the great thing. If you contact her and give her my name, she'll give you $100 off. So don't wait. Don't delay. Call today or go online and look up Wellhaven and Associates and send her an email and tell her what you need. She will get back with you promptly.
The year, 1888. The place, London's East End. Dead and mutilated bodies are popping up all over, from Stamford to Whitechapel. Jack the Ripper is leaving his mark, and the city's on edge. Yvonne Mason is back with a tale of murder and millinery. The Rhodes Hat Factory is booming while the body count rises. Why now? How are these hats connected? Has the Hatter gone mad? Mad Hatter, Yvonne Mason. Available now on Amazon.com.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. No, it is not Wednesday. It is Tuesday. This is Off the Chain. I'm your host, Yvonne Mason. And yes, that was some shameless promotion for two products that I use quite often and for my book, The Mad Hatter. Yeah, we have to get that in there. I decided to shake it up a little bit and do a Tuesday night show because this show is doing so well. The Blog Talk show itself is almost to 3,000 listeners. And with all the podcasts included, we are well over 7,000 listeners. So I ask you again, as I ask at every show, if you have not contacted me, why haven't you? I mean, after all, it costs you nothing to be on this show except an hour of your time. And yes, I do bring my guests back. And speaking of guests, I've been waiting a long time for this young man. I read his book, Mia's Tempest, and I have to tell you, it kept me up at night. I wanted to quit reading it so I could sleep, but I couldn't because he grabs you and he holds you. And we're going to find out more about Mia's Tempest. But let me just do a little background on this young man. His given name is Stephen Nance, and that's how you will find him on Facebook, but he writes under the name of L.A. Nance. And what he does is he wants to reclaim the glory of Gothic horror classics of the late 18th century, and I agree with him. Those were horror classics. What we have in this day and age is not horror, it's just special effects. It's L.A.'s opinion that there is more use of gore in a place of real horror in today's genre. It is his desire to revive what horror was and should be. His skills, short of a formal education in writing, is that the author understands the elements of a good story, that the need to grip and hold the reader in the first few paragraphs is essential to successful writing. L.A. has written many poems and short stories and uses an exercise that he believes gives him the skills to do just that. In taking a single word, as in rabbits, which is the bonus story in Mia's Tempest, and trust me, it will scare the hell out of you, he aims to turn that word into a story of horror as well as hone his skills as a writer. His experiences, his first novel, The Incubus Succubus, helped L.A. learn a great deal about what it takes to write a successful book. But he still says that it is a work in progress. He also has written a great number of poems that one can find online, and maybe if I talk real nice, he'll read one of those tonight. We never know where this show is going. That's why it's called Off the Chain. Welcome, L.A. How are you?
I am doing wonderful. How are you tonight?
Oh, if I felt any better, I couldn't stand myself. It might ought to be illegal. So tell me. Your given name is Stephen, which is how you show up on Facebook, but you write under L.A. Nance. Now, tell the audience how you got to that point from way back. Was writing something you've always done? Was it something that one day you woke up and said, I want to go back to the 18th century? Did a book fall off and knock you in the head? I mean, stranger things have happened. How
well,
did you come about?
Believe it or not, the first thing I ever wrote was in second grade, and it was for a short story competition. And I ended up winning second place in that competition over a grade from grades first through fifth. And I was in the second grade. It was called the Great Snail Race.
Wow.
After that, it was a poem here, a poem there over the years. And when I would be at work at a factory, I would get really bored with what I was doing because a lot of the stuff was just really simple. Push a button, move a part, push a button, move a part. So I started telling myself this story in my head to make the day go faster. And one thing led to another, and about 11 years ago, I ended up on disability. And I was like, I've got to do something with my time. So I took that story and refined it, and in 3 months, finished my first book, Incubus Succubus.
Wow. Now, I don't normally do this. I usually wait and let the audience, you know, like a good news show, you wait and save the best for last because you want to suck the customer and you want to suck the listeners and the viewers into the entire show. You don't want them turn. And ladies and gentlemen, you don't want to turn the show off, I'm telling you. We're just now getting started. But since this story started in your head as a factory worker, explain to the folks what this story entails.
It is a story of a vampire who has come to a point where he doesn't know if he has a right to be alive. And he's on his way to meet an old friend who's about to get a PhD in history as a professor. And because he hasn't fed in so long, he gets sick along the way. Well, one thing leads to another, and a small country girl out in Arizona finds him, nurses him back to health, and while he's delirious, she finds out what he is and ultimately steals blood from him, making herself into a vampire, which drives her insane. The entire book is him trying to chase her down to do what he knows he has to do because he knows she's gone insane. He has to put her down. And the whole book is him trying to catch up to her.
Now, let me ask you this. Is this book written in the vein of getting back to into the Gothic horror classics.
Oh, yeah.
Explain to our audience the difference between the blood and gore of today versus the beautifully written Gothic horrors of that century.
A good Gothic horror story will lead you in to a situation emotionally where you are unable to look away from whatever is happening, regardless of how beautiful or how horrific. And one of the highlights of Gothic horror was that they used sexuality as a means to pull out the little emotional demons in people, to force them to look at the darker side of themselves and realize that humanity was the real monster, that they were the real nightmare, not the creatures that the authors wrote about. In this book, there are things where the woman who steals the blood, she finds herself being captured by a cop who's basically a really, really bad guy, and takes her to this place where he's got 11 other women that he's getting ready to sell off to someone overseas. And in that, you see her coming into her own and realizing just what she can do in that small environment, and eventually out taking all those women with her.
I know I'm buying that book.
And she uses, and the reason that the book is entitled Incubus Succubus is because what a lot of people don't realize is that incubi and succubi weren't actually demons. They were vampiric spirits in true traditional folklore. And her way of feeding is through her sexuality. And the way I paint those moments where she can't stop what she's doing and what it does to the person she's doing it to are just unbelievably graphic without being bloody or gory.
Would it be safe to say that your style of writing, and I got it from reading Mia's Tempest, that the human dynamic of whatever wolf we decide to feed is the one that sometimes comes out in your book, and it puts the reader inside of that book, inside of that particular character?
Yes. Absolutely.
Interesting. Now, exercises do you use when you want to turn a story into a very strong story?
I will read it and read it and read it and read it and find the places that don't feel right, sentences that don't lead where they should, paragraphs. I've nixed in Incubus Succubus, I completely rewrote the entire first chapter 3 times just to get it to where I wanted it.
Let me ask you this. What as a reader would one find more horrifying? The way that you write, and I know the way you write because I've written your work, or the way that, I want to call it New Age. Is it, in your opinion, as it is in my opinion, that the old horror classics that we used to watch, or that I used to watch as a child, the old vampire movies with Lon Chaney and the one before him, as opposed to the vampire movies today, to me, I was more horrified watching those than I am what I see today, because I know what's going to happen and how it's going to happen and all the special effects. Which
one's more
scary?
It's what you don't see. It's what you don't see in film that is more terrifying than what you do see. Because when they leave you at a point where you don't see what's going on, and you know something's happening, all you have left is your mind to try and work out what is going on until they get you to that point. And that's where real horror comes from, in film and in books.
As in Psycho.
Yes, very much so. Also, it's a rare film, hard to find. It was done in the early 1920s, late 1919, somewhere in there. It's a French film called Vampire. And the way they use shadows in that movie is how they paint their horrific monster through the shadows. And it's an incredibly well done movie. The shadows will actually make you jump.
Well, I don't know if you remember the old radio show or have heard people talk about the old radio show. And it was titled The Shadow, and it always started out,
mm-hmm.
What evil lurks in the heart of men?
The shadow
or
knows.
Who knows what evil lurks, and the shadow knows. And I agree with you. It is the shadows that are most horrific. You're walking at night, and you're in a shadowed place. When are you the most frightened? Are you most frightened when you're under the halogen lamps, or are you most frightened when you're in the shadows?
Generally in the shadows.
It's the fear of the
unknown.
But
people also have to... Well, here's the thing that people also have to remember. When you're out in the dark and you've got a fire or a light, if it's not behind you, you're not going to see what's out beyond it. And that light does even more damage to your calm than the darkness does.
That is very true. That is very, very true. Had not thought of it that way before. But you're right. The light should always be in front of you and not behind you.
Well, it should be behind you because if it's in front of you, it actually hurts what you can and cannot see. If it's behind you, you have a better chance of seeing something moving in the darkness.
Interesting. Very interesting.
And those are the kind of things that I like to use metaphorically in my writing, those ideologies.
You work with leather, stone, and wood.
Yeah, I got to keep the hands busy.
What do you create with those three mediums?
With wood, it's... I do canes every now and then or walking sticks, and I prefer to use what most people would refer to as Viking themes, not work, runes, things like that. Stone, I do pretty much the same thing. If I can get a soft enough stone, I'll recreate an old stone carving from Norway or Iceland. Leather, it's pouches or pretty much anything someone might want in leather. Most recently, it was a couple of holsters.
Nice.
Yeah.
So not only are you a storyteller with words, but one could say that you're a storyteller with mediums.
Yeah, you could try. It works.
I see it. I see it because your creativity and your thought process and your imagination goes into each piece of artwork, which is unique unto itself. I'm sure that no two pieces that you create are ever alike.
No, they're not.
See? So you tell a story with mediums. Now, what I find interesting is you also create stories from music that you hear.
Yes.
Talk about that a little bit.
Well, one of the next books of short stories that I'm going to be working on is going to be occult themed. and already have the first story for that done, and it's called You Belong to Me. It was inspired by a song by the band God Module. The song's name is Still So Strange. The first time I heard it, when I hear music, I visualize what I'm listening to. And if a song has a really good story in it, I can come up with something really amazing. And You Belong to Me is, imagine you go too far in a BDSM scenario with your lover and they unfortunately pass away. Imagine that you're so overwhelmed with grief that you want them back and you'll do anything to get them back. The story revolves around that idea where the female passes away and he takes her into the basement with a very old family book and tries to resurrect her. What happens beyond that is where the terror and the fear comes in. It's really intense. Short of actually reading it, it's hard to actually give it any life because the story itself is so full of so much life. If that makes sense to you.
Yes. I it makes a lot of sense because grief changes people. Or can
it really
change.
Does.
And especially with something like that, it was not intentional, but it got out of hand. Therefore, not only does one have the grief, one has the guilt.
Yep.
And that is all connected with the powerful love that your two characters have for each other.
Yes.
So when you mix all three of those emotions together, you get a mess. Would that be a correct assessment?
You get a big mess. you get a really big mess. Let's put it this way. At one point during his little experiment, his ears end up bleeding from the sheer pitch of the hordes of screams coming out of his dead wife's body. Give you a hint.
Yes. You got to let me know when that's out so we can bring you back in October, November. You're coming back for sure. You done it now, L.A., as they say. You done it now.
I've got a few more stories to write before that one's done, but I'm working on it.
See, ladies and gentlemen, we never know what we're going to talk about on this show. We haven't even gotten to the one that I read that kept me up at night. So, you and I talked a little bit earlier about a part of your life, and I said that if you were comfortable discussing it, we would discuss it. Are you still comfortable
yeah.
with that? Okay, I'm going to let you
just
lead
a little
off
bit.
And you lead off and take it as far as you want to take it.
Well, suffice to say that I am what is referred to as a living vampire. And I think I'll leave it at that.
Okay. Done deal. Case closed. No. Ladies and gentlemen, if you want to know more, you have to talk to him directly.
You can actually research living vampire online, and you'll find quite a bit of interesting information.
And it is very interesting. It's very informative, and it's very educational.
Yes, it is.
Now, that being
yes,
said,
it is.
There is a story in Mia's Tempest
mm-hmm.
that you took one word and created the story around this one word. Explain that, if you will, to our audience before we even get into Mia's Tempest, because this one story is just unreal.
Who are you referring to rabbits?
I am.
When I when I get my head into a place where I can't seem to focus to write, I'll ask my fiance for a word. I've written about socks. I've written about rabbits, as is in the back of Maya's Tempest, as a bonus story. My goal is to make sure that that one word is turned into a story that is true, pure horror. And what I did with rabbits has been compared to a over-the-edge, why are you trying to torment me version of Watership Down? In short, once you read rabbits, you will never look at them as cute, fluffy, and fun, and innocent ever again.
No, it's my perception of rabbits is not this. I don't want to see them, don't want to touch them, don't want to look at them.
Well, you don't want to have an avatar coming after you.
No. Don't be liking rabbits anymore. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. That's my goal.
I know. You did a very good job. I started reading that story. I said, where is he going with this? What in the hell has he done? They're Easter bunnies. No, they're not.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
No.
They are forest Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
They will come after you.
Mm-hmm. Ladies and gentlemen, don't go in the forest and hunt rabbits. I'm just going to say that much. Just
yeah,
leave the guns
thing.
At home. Don't go hunting rabbits. Mm-mm. Trust me.
Ah.
No, that story was scary. Real scary. Yeah, okay.
Well, when I got to the point in the story where the one rabbit was going down into the dark place to pull a bone out, it got away from me, and I found myself writing faster than I could think. Well, actually thinking faster than I could write. And by the time I got to the end of it, I was kind of exhausted. It was a flurry of writing.
It was a bevy of rabbits is what it was. Ladies and gentlemen, trust me, it's not Thumper and Bambi. Mm-mm, it's not a Thumper. No, mm-mm.
Well,
it's Thumper on steroids.
You will see Bambi's dad get killed, though.
Yeah,
you will
true.
Do that.
Yes, you will. And then Thumper is on steroids and who knows what else, PCP, I don't know, crack, I don't know.
He's just calling on all the former spirits of every rabbit who had ever been killed before.
Talking about a hare in the woods. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Now, what we have...
Rabbits. Rabbits.
Rabbits too will never be the same.
Amen. All right.
We could do this all night. We have to give a shout-out to your publisher, though, because if it
yes.
weren't for Black Bed Sheets and my good friend Nicholas Grabowski, that lovely little story probably would not have seen the light of day. I mean, that's right up Nicholas's alley.
I am very thankful for Mr. Grabowski. Funny story. Back when I first got sick and... In the very first draft of Incubus Suck at the Cyber Rope, I submitted to him for review. And everyone knows he does not read unedited work, right?
Exactly.
He got back to me with a review of my book. And... That was the flame, that was the spark that lit the flame to make me want to be a better writer. Because he was kind of brutal, as he absolutely should have been. But he was also, paraphrasing, he said it was one of the most disturbed and upsetting pieces of horror he had read in a long time.
He loved it.
Yes, very much so. And when he contacted me early last year, late the year before last, asking me if I was still writing. I was just overjoyed.
I have known Nicholas for 9-10 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have Nicholas Grabowski in your corner, you cannot go wrong.
That's the feeling I got.
This man has forgotten more about publishing, rejection, and writing than anybody else that I've ever known or dealt with. Probably knows more than I would say anybody in the Big Six. Now, ladies and gentlemen, when I say the Big Six, I'm talking about the traditional publishing houses. This man has been out there as an indie since the 1980s. He has been burnt by publishers. He has had his work stolen. And yet he has come back bigger and better every time. For those of you who do not know, he is amazing. For those of you who do not know, Nicholas wrote Halloween 4. Remember Michael Myers and Halloween? Well, Nicholas wrote Halloween 4. The man has a mind that is absolutely amazing, scarier than hell, but he is but he is extremely loyal to his authors and to his friends because he's been there too. So if you've got Nicholas in your corner and he told you that was the most disturbing thing he'd read in a long time, that was the highest compliment that anyone could receive from him.
And that's exactly how he took it. It really was, because it seriously inspired me.
Well, I am glad that it lit a fire under you, because we wouldn't have this wonderful other book. Yes, we're going to talk about Maya's Tempest now, because you people have been so patient. But you cannot go and buy the book yet. You got to wait till we're done here. Don't be leaving this show. So, L.A., tell the folks about Maya's Tempest, because that was a scary. And then you put rabbits in the back of it. I mean, really?
Well, Maya's Tempest started out as just my writing exercise. The first story I wrote for it, allergies, was the first word I ever used in that exercise. And when I was done, I showed it to friends and a couple of coworkers that I was still in touch with. And a couple of them told me they thought it was better than the Andromeda Strain. And a couple of them told me that they had been having nightmares since they read it. And I was like, really? And they're like, what else do you got? And I was like, give me some more words. And as I started writing, using this writing exercise, I saw a theme starting to form. And I realized I was writing a book of short stories that was actually one story separated by multiple individuals. And that's where Maya's Tempest came from.
Tell the audience a little bit about the theme and some of the characters in this book, because I was reading along, and it dropped off, and then I picked up the next one, and I'm going, wait, I'm confused. But then when I went back and read the end and then started into the second chapter, the second story, and I'm reading along, and it started making sense to me. Then it all unfolded.
Oh, yeah.
So explain to our listeners the theme and the characters as they travel and intertwine through these different stories.
The theme is Mother Nature has had it with humanity. She is just absolutely fracking done with us. And the first story, Allergy, starts out in the spring. Each consecutive story follows through the seasons all the way through to winter. And there's one character that reoccurs several times, either by mention or by actually being there, and that's Maya. The whole story comes down to her being able to accept her responsibility for her part in ending all of this and refusing to do so. She simply cannot accept that she has to die in order for all of the madness that's going on to end. Because, and when I say madness, imagine the ozone layer disappearing around the equator for just a day, one day, and what all that solar radiation would do to every place it touched. It would be horrifying. It'd literally be hell on Earth.
Yep.
And then you have the thunderstorms that come in the spring. And instead of them just being regular thunderstorms, they're spawning tornadoes that are 1 mile, 2 miles wide and travel for up to 150 miles at a time, just spawning all over the Midwest and moving east. Thunder and lightning so loud and so fast and so repetitious that it sounds like you are standing between 150 howitzers going off endlessly for 15 minutes and watching people get hit as if being targeted by lightning and literally vaporized. Mother Nature has had it with mankind. And that's where Maya's Tempest comes in. She is a witch with 4 other friends who decide that they are going to try and bring an end to all this chaos through a spell. And when it comes her turn to make the sacrifice, she fails. And I can't say much more than that without giving away the entire book and the ending.
And I don't want you to do that, but there is a theme of truth as within, if one reads with an open mind, as within all books, one can learn something.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh,
the
yeah.
thing that when I finished Maya's Tempest before I got into the rabbits in the woods, the thing still haunts me. The thing that I got from this marvelous, well-crafted, spellbinding, hook-me-in book was in our life, we have to accept responsibility for our actions, because for every action, there is always
yep.
an equal and opposite reaction,
mm-hmm.
and there's always a consequence.
Well, that's really well defined in Drowning, the story that takes place in Hawaii. And when I say drowning, forget about water. I just leave it at that.
Just leave it at that. Y'all got to read the book, but don't you dare leave now. We're not done here. I see you. So when one reads Maya's Tempest, and the same with the Incubus Succubus, what you have done is you have created a horror story that could physically make one sick or keep one up at night. Or
oh, yeah.
make one want to throw the book clear across the room in frustration, but then go and pick the damn thing up and say, well, I'll just read one more sentence, and 3 days later you're still there.
Mm-hmm.
But you've taught several things. One, you've taught accountability.
Mm-hmm.
You've taught that if we don't take care of that which we've been entrusted with, there are things that will and do happen.
Yep.
You have taught that if you don't know what the hell you're doing with the craft, leave it alone.
Amen.
Because if you don't, things happen that you have no control over, and then you have all these consequences.
Mm-hmm.
You have taught that self-sacrifice, in some cases, in most cases, is the noblest of all things.
Yes. And these are human truths. And far too many people ignore them or take them for granted today. And that's why Maya's Tempest is there, to hopefully remind people that we do have responsibilities, not just to ourselves, but to the environment we live in and everyone around us.
And when we don't take care of that which we have been given, whether it's...
We're fucked.
Exactly. Whether it's a relationship, whether it's our own self, because we are a gift to ourselves. We have been granted that as a gift. And when we don't take care of that, and we don't take care of a relationship, or we don't take care of the environment around us, and I'm just not talking about outside, ladies and gentlemen. I'm talking about the home where you live, the food that you eat, the things that you have. When you don't take care of that, there are always consequences.
Yes, there are.
And your stories, while horrific, and rabbits is the same way.
Oh, definitely.
While that story is rip your throat out horror, it has that same thread of responsibility and accountability and purpose.
Yes. Yes. If anything, Gothic horror in its true traditional sense was used to try and educate people about they need to really be afraid of. And it's almost always ourselves.
I could not have said that any better, because I was, just as you said that, the words were right on the tip of my tongue. That is the true thing that we need to fear. Not the perpetrator, not the environment, not the right or wrong president in the White House, not any of the protesters, but ourselves. Because we do not know how to hold ourselves accountable, nor do we know how to accept others where they are in life.
Mm-hmm.
We are having
know thyself.
A wonderful... And to thyself be true.
Amen.
So, and that's why we call this off the chain, because, L.A., I never know where these conversations are going to go. But your book just brought that out as I was reading it. I'm thinking, this is more than just a story of horror. This book shows a purpose. It shows a thread of hope, even as the person that is the hope is fighting against it.
Yep. Because you never know where that hope is going to lead you, or if that hope is going to change to something or someone else.
Exactly.
And that's why I ended Maya's Tempest the way I did.
Well, I tell you what, that was one heck of a book. I highly, highly recommend that book. Rabbits and all.
Thank you very much for that.
You're welcome. I did an audio review on that book, and it is really getting the hits, because that book stayed with me for days and days and days, because I'm thinking, he nailed it. He nailed what we do to ourselves and each other and the world around us simply because we tend to be selfish.
Yep.
Okay, you definitely got to finish these stories, because I know that your other short stories with this, You Belong to Me, have got to be just as magnificent and awesome and what other descriptive word I can think of. Horrifying.
You Belong to Me is definitely horrifying the way it ends. I had a friend of mine, he sent me 3 pictures and wanted me to create a story off of each one of them just to see what I would write. And I took those 3 pictures and I was looking at them. I realized they're not independent stories. Those 3 pictures are part of one big story. And I'm not going to tell you the name of it, but it is going to be in with You Belong to Me. And let me say this. You'll never think about the resurrection the same way ever again.
Oh, gee, thanks. Oh, good grief. First rabbits and now the resurrection.
I do what I can.
And you do it so well.
Thank you. I appreciate
it. I want to know why it took you from 2009 to 2015. I mean, I know that it took you that long for Nicholas to contact you, but why that stretch? Why 6 years?
Well, when I was pronounced disabled, I was told I would never work again. And it's for a very long string of a large number of disorders, syndromes, etc. I have a window of about 4, maybe 5 hours a day that I can actually get anything done. So it takes time for me to get these stories.
That's about normal for me because after 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm finished. So I understand
yeah.
that.
Well, my day usually starts somewhere between 9 and 12 in the morning. And it just took a while. Before I got sick, I was a workaholic. I was pulling down 3 jobs anywhere from 5 to 7 days a week. And I was constantly, constantly busy. And when I was told I would never work again, for a workaholic, you can imagine what that's like. It took me some time to adjust, and that adjustment was not easy.
But the thing is, it could have been a blessing in disguise.
And that's exactly how I see it.
Because now you can give the world the horror that is within you.
Oh,
and
yeah.
My husband is disabled. I don't like that term. My brother is also disabled, but I don't like that term or handicap. I was talking with another author the other night, and her son is autistic. So we have come up with a new term for people like you and my husband and her son and my brother. It's called a uniqueness.
I like it.
And you're unique because things that now you are able to do,
yeah,
you might not have had the opportunity to do them before.
I totally agree with that. There's absolutely no way I'd have ever been able to become a good writer if I was still working the way I was. I simply would not have had the time, nor would I have made the time, because I enjoyed working that much.
I understand that. From someone who's worked since she was 5 years old, I get it.
Yep.
But
and,
as we get older and as our life changes, would it be fair to say that our perspectives and our perception changes?
Some people change. Whether that's for the good or bad is always up to debate. But for other people, especially writers, and I think you'll agree with me on this, it's not so much that we change, it's that our perception of things sharpens.
Good point.
And we become far more aware.
Mm-hmm. Very well
said. And
stated.
For me, that is the truth.
And while I don't, I'm not going to say I'm happy for the change in you, because that is not how I mean it. I am grateful that you have this opportunity to be so horrifying.
Well, trust me, I'm glad I'm getting the chance to write and to actually enjoy it, because my biggest goal is to be self-sufficient off my writing one day. That's my dream.
And it will happen. Because now you put it out there in the universe. You've spoken it out loud, and I am a proponent that when we speak things out loud and we throw it out there in the universe, they will happen.
Well, it's all energy, and you put it out there, and it mixes with other energy. It goes places.
Absolutely. And like I told you before the show, you will get a following on this show. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to bring him back. I promise. He will be back. No, and you can't hang up now. You've got to hang in there. Now,
still got stuff to talk about.
Yes. What I need for you to do now is, before we run out of time, because we're about 5 minutes out of running out of time, let all these nice folks know where you can be found and where your works can be found.
You can find me at the Black Bedsheets main webpage. Look for the author, L.A. Nance. You can also find me on Facebook. I have a fan page there labeled L.A. Nance. And, if you would like to see my poetry, I am on postpoint.org. And I actually have that page up if you really wanted to hear one of my poems.
Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
Read you one of my favorites. It is titled, And. Bear with me, this will be the first time I ever read one of my poems aloud.
Oh, it'll be good.
Damp and damp and damp, the things on my skin cold, biting, itching, crawling, what smells of mold. Dark and dark and dark, my eyes itch so dry, no vision of sugar plums. Is that a dreaming sun or a lie? Stale and stale and stale. The air is gone, broke. No breath to breathe away. Can I please have a smoke? Cold and cold and cold. This chill in my bones. I can't feel my fingers or toes. Am I lying upon a field of stones? Noise, noise, and noise. I feel my heart beat as it far off drone. I can't hear myself. Where are the screams coming from?
You gave me chills.
That's...
Wow.
It's one of my favorite personal poems.
Okay. We shall now rename you Edgar Allan Poe Reincarnated. The first thing I thought of. The first thing I thought of was the House of Usher.
Wow. That is an absolute compliment. Thank you. He's one of my favorite authors.
He is my favorite. I grew up reading
poem,
that.
His poem alone is my personal favorite.
The Raven is mine. The House of Usher was the first movie I went. It was the first horror movie I went to see with Vincent Price. And
love
when you're
Vincent
reading
Price.
That. When you're reading that, all I'm thinking about and all I'm visualizing is the female character in the crypt trying to claw her way out.
Wow. Thank you.
No, thank you. More nightmares tonight, ladies and gentlemen. Y'all kind of
You're welcome.
Well, sadly, but he's coming back, and he will read more. When you come back, I want to bring you back before October. So maybe June, July, you'll come back and read some more poetry for us and tell us where
of
you
course.
Are in your writings. I'll set some dates and send you some dates and get you set back up. But see, okay, ladies and gentlemen, at the end of every show, which is going to be very shortly, I always discuss dreams, and I always discuss the fact that someone says, I have a dream, but. L.A., what would you tell someone if they said that?
I would ask them if they remembered scents, colors, shapes, sounds, and help them try to figure out what the dream meant based off what those things meant to them.
If they want, if they say, well, I want to, I envy you, I want to do like you do, but I don't have this, I don't have that, I don't have, what are you going
to
tell them?
I'd tell them to pull their head out of their ass and get to it. Don't stop.
There you
don't
go.
Wait. Don't assume you can't. No one knows what they're capable of until they do it. To quote
Even
Yoda,
the,
there is no try, there is only do.
Exactly. Even if they have a uniqueness, and we're all unique. I live in a right-handed world. I stutter when I'm tired. I can't formulate words when my brain goes to sleep. But we're all unique. So if someone says, well,
mm-hmm,
I have this handicap, right? Malarkey.
Mm-mm.
We don't, L.A. and I aren't buying off on that.
I have a friend who was born with just hands, no arms. She's a school teacher, and she suffers from severe anxiety disorders, but she's still a school teacher. If you have a dream, go for it. Don't let anyone tell you you can't.
Absolutely. Don't even tell yourself you can't, because
Amen.
if I get wind of it, and I know if L.A. gets wind of it, we will visit you in your nightmares. Because we can't.
That's another story.
We will visit you. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a dream and you're using all of these piddly excuses of why you can't make your dream real, understand this. Our world would not be what it is today if it were not for the dreamers. If it were not for the artists, the inventors, the painters, the musicians, yes, even the military commanders, because they had dreams, the presidents, the senators, the school teachers, the stock boy, the trash people, they're all dreamers.
There's a thing I like to tell people when they're down and out. I'll take them outside and have them look up at the stars, and I'll tell them to imagine all the vastness of creation. And then think about how small they really are in all of that, how absolutely infinitesimally small they are within the vastness of creation. And then I'll tell them none of it works without you.
Exactly. That is perfect. So, ladies and gentlemen, take what L.A. says and put it to use. Remember this. We only go around once. We only get one shot at this. And if we don't get it right, we don't get to do this again. Tomorrow night, we'll be here at 8 o'clock. Don't have the name in front of me and my guests, but I'm sure they're going to be great. They always are. L.A., thank you so very much for spending
You're
an
very
hour
welcome.
With me. It flew by. I don't know where it went.
It
probably
did.
With the rabbits.
They're at the door.
They are at the door. And I'm going to get you back on here in June, so give me some poetry going so we can spend the hour right talking about your poetry and your reading poetry and get you a following going. Then we'll bring you back in October, November. Ladies and gentlemen, we're closing the show with this. Dream big or go the hell home. Because
Amen.
there are other dreamers out there that will do it. Until tomorrow night at 8 o'clock, we say good night.
Good night.
L.A.,
yes.
When we get off of this show, it will archive. And when it archives,
okay,
I'm going to put the link on my page, and I'm going to tag you in it.
Okay.
I want you to take and post this show everywhere you want to post it. This is my gift to you. Post it on your fan page, your personal page, your website. and have your network repost it, and then in the morning I will upload this show. Once this show archives, it will go into iTunes, and it will go into Stitcher, which is heard on Sirius Radio.
Okay.
I will upload it to Mixcloud, SoundCloud, Spreaker, and Podcast.com. When I upload it to Spreaker, it goes to YouTube, to TuneIn Radio, to FM.com, and I don't know how many more satellite podcasts it picks it up. That's how we have over 7,500 listeners.
Okay. Wow.
So when I upload it to those different podcasts, I will also put those on my page and tag you in it, and you throw that out there in your network.
I absolutely will.
Because we're getting you out there, my friend.
Thank you.
And I'm going to make a note, get you back in June. So that'll give you an opportunity to do some poetry and have some new stuff for me, because you got to do a book of poetry now. You know that, right?
I've basically got one done. I've just never done anything with it.
Well, Mr. Poe Jr., Mr. Poe Reincarnated, this old white woman needs some of your poetry.
Well, I've got 48 of them up on postpoem.org, just sitting there.
I want it. Put it in the book form so I can buy it and you can get paid for it.
Okay. I have a title for it.
Well, tell Nicholas that you're sending him a book of poetry, because the old white witch said she needs a book of poetry. And Nicholas will say, yes, sir, anything she wants.
Trust me. I will do that.
All right, my darling. I will let you go, and thank you so much for spending an hour with me. I enjoyed it so much. I really, really did. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you. I enjoyed it myself.
And made you laugh, too, didn't I?
Yes, ma'am.
All right, darling. We'll talk to you later.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.